very difficult for somebody who has been in the traditional media for as long as you and I have to open a program and not mention what day of the week it is. I keep falling on that.
Do you know what day of the week it is?
I think it's Tuesday, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's hard to know what day of the week it is, but beyond that, it's not as relevant anymore in terms of this program, because as you keep pointing out, people watch or listen to this whenever the hell they want.
I mean, I had a couple of people went when John Cooper was named the head of the Olympic team yesterday. They went back and logged on and listened to our interview with John Cooper. So when was that? Gosh, 4 months ago. Just to get a sense of what the guy's like.
Kind of mid-season, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that mid-season was kind of 4 months ago.
And we should have John back on now. He's too big for us now.
He's too big. He's a star. He's a two-time Stanley Cup winner.
He's a big fan. I don't think he likes you, but he likes me. So,
okay. You ask.
Necessary. Shut up.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
So this Goran Dragic thing.
Oh, come on. This happens more times than, I mean, guy says something in the local media in a different language, gets lost in translation, life goes on.
Wait a second. You're buying all that crap? He said it. Live with it. I'm okay with it. He says, you know, his aspirations are, I'm paraphrasing, greater than coming to Toronto. Yeah. Okay, cool. And
I'm not offended by that.
That's an honest statement.
That's how you spell D-A-L-L-A-S.
Well, okay. He doesn't think much of the team that the Raptors have. I don't either, to tell you the truth. I don't think it's a championship caliber team. It doesn't have, everybody likes the bright, shiny thing, especially women. But everybody likes the bright.
Oh, no, don't say that.
What's,
you can't say that anymore.
Yeah, I can.
No, you can't.
Well, how many diamonds in your wedding ring? Not the one you gave Mickey. Exactly. So don't give me that. So he wants the bright,
and the
shiny
answer is,
thing.
The answer is and, one. The answer,
well,
answer is
in
one.
What's the bright, shiny thing in Toronto? Who's the guy you really want to play with? Who's the superstar? Well, right now they don't have one. You could have argued Kyle Lowry, maybe.
No.
You could definitely. Kawhi definitely was the bright, shiny thing.
Sure.
But right now they don't have one. Right. So I get it. I'm not offended by the fact that he doesn't really want to play in Toronto. Now, if he does come here, and there's no guarantee he will, he may get shipped out. But if he comes to Toronto and lives here for a while,
he will love it.
Well, maybe he will. Not everybody has.
He will love it. This is such a great, it becomes such a great city, a cosmopolitan, an international city.
Well,
you know,
but there have been a few international players that have come here and weren't enamored with it.
You mean, how many times can you say he do Turkaloo?
Well, there's one.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
Yeah. I still will be shocked if Dragic plays here. Quite frankly, I mean,
well, so will I. So I think the whole thing is, who cares?
Yeah, all the talk has, you know, even before the sign and trade. By the way, we haven't got the results of that tampering investigation yet. Going to Dallas?
The tampering thing, is that an investigation into Toronto or investigation into Miami? I think it's Miami.
Yeah. They've got pretty stiff fines, $10 million fines.
Well, yeah, they're not going to reverse the deal.
No, but when Kyle quietly put his house up for sale or during the season,
wasn't that quiet? Got out.
Yes. Yeah. It was supposed to be quiet, Bob.
He was almost competing with me.
But it wasn't Kyle's house in your neighborhood? Isn't he over
somewhere
there?
Somewhere around here, yeah.
Yeah, I thought so.
I don't know exactly. I know Van Vliet's just up the street. But I don't remember where Kyle was.
Yeah, I thought he was in the bridle path. So
he's, well, somewhere up here.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway.
The Olympics are over,
but we're going to talk about the Olympics. Our good friend, Mary Ormsby of the Toronto Star is going to join us. And we would have Mary on anyway, because, well, for a variety of reasons, but she loves the Olympics, loves amateur sport. But what I don't know whether this will be our focus, but our Canadian women were three times as successful as the Canadian men in Tokyo.
Yeah. Yeah.
They won 18 medals, 18, and the men won 6. What does that mean? Where are we going? Is this an indictment of men's amateur sport, or is it, should it be nothing but applause for the women? And I can't think of anybody better to address this.
As a cup half full guy, I think the latter. Well, I think that the women have done a marvelous job.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Is some of this, I've said this before, either you're a great athlete or you're not. If you take a 5-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old who is a great athlete and focus them in on a sport, it almost doesn't matter what the sport is. They will excel based upon their physical prowess. You can teach them to play golf or tennis or baseball or basketball or hockey or football or almost anything else. What's his focus going to be? Or what's his level of interest going to be that targets him there? And are too many of our male athletes, I wouldn't say too many, but are an unusual number of our male athletes focused on hockey, baseball, football, basketball.
Team sports. Yeah.
And not to individual sports like the Olympics. We'll address all of this, we hope, with our friend Mary Ormsby. We'll come back after these messages. It's McCowan. It's Shannon with you for another day, another 50 cents. And here's one of our favorite people who has not been on this podcast before, but was many, many, many times on the radio television program. Mary Ormsby of the Toronto Star is with us. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Bob. Hello, John. So great to be here with you. It's exciting.
Well, the whole place is just we've upped our class now with you here. Holy smoke! Between Bob and me, we're kind of at the bottom of the pole, but you're here. This is fantastic.
Or you've run out of guests on your list. You won't do it.
No. The magic of Mary Ormsby is that when we have a question we need answered, you're the one that we know you can answer the tough questions.
Oh boy. Okay.
Well, not that we're going to ask any, but here's sort of the topic that I thought we would address, and that is the Olympics just over. The performance by the women on our Olympic team was extraordinary. And that's become rather more the norm than the exception. 24 medals in all, 18 of them won by women. The first 11 medals Canada won were all by women. Is there a way to analyze why that is specifically, Mary?
Well, I think, the 10,000 foot view is, women have been struggling for over a century to get a foothold in the games that mattered, which meant, can I compete at all? Are there enough events for me? And if you're looking at, I think, Canada's role and the way it has supported women, probably 1976 in Montreal, we had the Summer Games here. In Canada, a lot of younger people may not really know that, but or remember that so much. But the impact of 76, I think, was really huge in establishing a groundswell that sport matters in Canada and amateur sport matters in Canada for men and women. And in Montreal, of course, we did not win a gold, won a couple of medals, but not a gold. And then when Canada had Calgary in 1988. Again, we were the only host nation to never win a gold again, and that wasn't solved until Vancouver. So the part of that is national pride with amateur sports, but I still think that women's journey really began in 76, but kicking it off when, the government began to get involved more and, sort of threw out that idea that perhaps we should support athletes with money, which a lot of people didn't like at the time, but that is, to me, kind of where the traction began. And now we're seeing the fruits of that labor many, many decades later.
Do you think it was the result of the, and I hate to use the word failure, but in essence, the failure to achieve any level of reasonable success in Montreal? I mean, if it wasn't for Greg Joy on the very last day of the Olympics, you know, we would have been quite embarrassed, I think.
Yeah, well, yeah, failure is the wrong word because everyone was trying their best. And as a host,
of course.
Yeah, no, as a host country, you get to be in everything. I think that was the rule then. I think it's still the rule now. But I think there was an awakening there that on the world stage, we didn't perform as well as we could have and should have. And more than hockey matters to the country. And I think that was one of the big takeaways, you know. And it was beyond just the pool and the track. As well, it was other things that, you know, that Canadians do well, and should they be supported? So I think that's where, and again, Canada put its money where its mouth was, really, and that's when we started the idea of more funding for the athletes, at least. And then as part of that journey, and this is critical for women too, they began funding the infrastructure, and that does not necessarily mean bricks and mortar. To me, that means great coaching, great programs, great espoir or junior programs to get you into the next ranks. Because for a long time, I think women just got coached by guys who couldn't get a job with the men's team, essentially. Mm-hmm. And over time, you began developing coaches that were specific to women's needs, whether they were male or female, or trans, you know, and not treating women like they were junior men. So I think all those things, like in a nutshell, is what's helped produce what we have now today. And you can see that it works, you know, when you really focus on people, if you're going to spend the money on people, not just the athletes with the great training and physio and recovery and go around the world and compete, but you must have coaches that understand you. You must have physiotherapists. You must have all those supports that go with it. So if you want to be a full-time athlete, you can, or a full-time, part-time athlete, if you still want to go to school and train for the Olympics, those options are available for you.
Where does Own the Podium fit into all this, Mary?
I think that's huge. Essentially, you get rewarded for doing well at a world level. What do you think?
It seems to me, actually, in watching the Olympics, it seems now that we have gone a very much the American route, where we have, you talked about government financing, but corporate partners. Mm-hmm. We have corporate partners now. The Royal Bank is big into promoting the Olympics and having programs. Canadian Tire has it. I mean, there are lots of now corporate citizens, SOBEs, that have involved themselves in the system, which is a very American style of doing it. But On the Podium has almost taken a step back this games particularly. They weren't mentioned near as much as they have been in previous years. I wondered, I mean, they were the impetus, I guess, but they needed the rest of the country corporately to take over. Is that a fair statement?
I would say that that's correct. And it's funny you'd even mention that because, yeah, the Americans don't think twice about it. Of course, you're supposed to, you know, donate to your community and the you know, private corporations step up. But there was a time too, this is how dating myself or carbon dating myself, but there was a time too when booze ads and tobacco in particular, and we're talking right to a bit of a, you know, a 50 plus crowd here, where there was a lot of money in certain sports because tobacco was allowed to be advertised. I'll just use, you know, alpine skiing for one, a huge sponsor for skiing in Canada back in some of those really early Crazy Canuck days. So there was money there, and that provided a big platform for, you know, the men mostly, but the women too, to compete. When that got drained and the laws changed and you could not advertise tobacco, some of those companies just backed off sports completely. Tennis was part of it, Du Maurier.
Mm-hmm. Golf.
Golf, and in this country, curling.
Car racing.
Was big. Yeah, so, you know, so for amateurs who, you know, got to scrape a little bit of the barrel back in the 80s for cash dollars, that was mm-hmm. those were setbacks. So I don't know if that is a direct line to, you know, Well, I guess I should say that that money disappeared for a while. So if anything, you know, the corporate money comes up, whether it's silently recognized or not, but now it seems to be expected, and it should be. Corporations should be donating.
So we engage in this system whereby for 2.5 weeks every 4 years, or I guess at more accurately every 2 years, considering the Winter Games, we indulge in the Olympic Games and amateur sport and are introduced to a bunch of athletes the vast majority of us have never heard of.
Right.
And we feed that animal over the space of 2.5 weeks. And then we go into a comatose state where we pay no attention. And when I say we, I mean most Canadians. And I don't think you'd disagree with that.
And the media. And the media.
Well,
so there's no coverage.
For sure. And I'm not sure that that is different. And let's just compare ourselves to the Americans. And I understand 1/10 of the population, et cetera, et cetera. And you're never going to get into a position where Canada can win as many medals as the U.S. is. But that's essentially the same kind of system that they have there, too, where very little attention is paid to Olympic-style events. I used to use the phrase amateur sport, you know, in describing the Olympics, but you can't do that anymore. Is there a way out of this hole?
Well, I don't know if I actually agree with your statement, Bob, about everyone forgetting the Olympics and the amateurs, because there are, maybe because I'm a bit more dialed in and I like it, and you guys like it when there's like world championships or something goes on, mm-hmm. and can't do well, anything beyond hockey type of thing. We've got NCAA sports, lots of kids down there, if they, you know, win championships or come close, those are followed as well. Covering the sports now with media, with a lot of shrinking newsrooms, particularly the way the industry is going, you're lopping off some of those reporters too. So in that regard, you are correct. You know, there is not a steady stream of, you know, may he rest in peace, Randy Starkman, who colleague of the Toronto Star, was
right.
His mission, and he was so good at it, and he, you know, did it daily, year round. You know, it doesn't matter what Olympic year or not. So we've lost a lot of that. Maybe it's like a lot of things. Like, I don't know how many people pay attention to pro sports unless it comes to the postseason. It's probably a very terrible analogy. I know that it is because it's major league, but maybe it's always going to be cyclical. Maybe that makes it healthier. No one gets tired of it. And if you can draw in your fringe people who don't really care that much about sports, you know, most of the time, then then that's a win for those 2 weeks. However, the ratings this year were like, right? Television ratings.
Yeah, they were. But, I 13 hours to the Eastern time zone is really something hard to make up for, particularly when you could wake up. And if you woke up at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning and watched, you know, clicked on a newspaper site or on social media, you knew who won.
True.
And so then there was no urgency, Mary. There was no urgency for you to say, well, I got to get to the television and I got to watch. I could actually go and find it. I could scroll down my timeline and find the video there. And then I'm not in the rating system. So it's really one of the difficult parts of what we're trying to do in North America, particularly. And the Europeans do it too. But in North America, when it comes to ratings, and saying, well, nobody's watching. Well, that wasn't true.
Is that true?
People were watching on so many different levels, differently. You know, I was talking to Bob last week about the CBC Gem app, which I absolutely fell in love with.
Yeah.
It was great for me because I could watch replays. I could watch a venue when I wanted, and I didn't have, I was my own programmer. And I think a lot more people, and I think technology is allowing a lot more people to watch the Olympics differently now. And I think that's important too.
Well, let's focus back on this male versus female element that became quite apparent right from the get-go. The first 11 medals were all won by women. And then three times as many medals won by women than men. It would be easy, Mary, to suggest that young male athletes tend to be attracted to team sports, high profile North American sports, hockey principally, but ever increasingly basketball, baseball, soccer. There are plenty of events that offer a remunerative career where you can actually earn a living and a very good one if you excel in those events. And the Olympics don't, as a general rule, offer that same remuneration or potential remuneration. How do we change that? How do we get young athletes to be attracted to the Olympic sports rather than the team sports in this country?
Are you talking about male?
No, female too.
Females too.
Well, females have less of that impact because
they have less options.
They have fewer options in terms of a professional career.
Right.
And I think to some extent that does come, that does, I don't know, maybe you don't agree, but does that answer the question of why there were three times as many medals won by women?
I think it's a complicated set of answers and circumstances, Bob, but that may be one of them, because there are more, if being paid is what you would like to do to be in your sport, then who wouldn't be? Because you, if you're an athlete, you love your sport. You'd love to play till you're 100 years old and every day of the week.
Yep.
But now there's you know, some soccer in the U.S. and there's WNBA, things that weren't around in 1976. Let's put it that way. So we've got a few more options. And some women, if they want to leave North America, you can go play, you know, like say so-called semi-pro in Europe. You want to play volleyball with a club in Europe or wherever. So there are options, but those are big. Those are big asks for people who maybe want to stay here, home, or stay in North America and want to train. You know, and again, when you go to the girls who go to the you know, the NCAA route, for a lot of them, that's the end of the line, and it's a great end of the line for people. You get a, you know, a scholarship, and you get to play 4 years of college down in the U.S. That's huge. So, you know, is that the reason some of them are staying in the stream and aim for the Olympics? I just don't think there's one answer. How to keep them in sport. This RBC training ground thing, which was kind of new to me, show up, bring your shorts and t-shirt and, you know, running shoes, and you think you're a kayaker, but, you know, the cycling people would like to have a look at you. That's kind of interesting.
It is interesting. Yeah.
It sounds a little bit like Cold War from, you know, parts of the world would just like take your kids and say, you're going to be a gymnast and you're going to be a diver. But I mean, that's kind of interesting too. Like maybe that prolongs some careers. Like, I guess, was it Kelsey Mitchell?
Yeah.
Cyclist won the last goal, you know, so she was doing something else and then they parked her in cycling and away she went.
I know the answer, it's almost rhetorical, but how important is winning?
Oh, I think winning and personal bests, I use them the same, because personal bests still mean.
Why is that? Personal best to me is, and I'm going to get some notes on this. Personal best is a participation medal.
Well, okay. I meant if you're an athlete and you're at the Olympics and you're fourth, right? The Canadian, famous Canadian finish fourth. But you're still hitting personal bests and you still think, I want to be in this sport for another 4 years. Well, you're progressing, you're improving. Why would you bail out if you're still getting faster or stronger or getting better marks and touches, right? I understand what you're saying. Winning, of course, is going to make it great. You know, that would be a huge adrenaline surge and impetus and more sponsors to give you more, you know, opportunities. I don't know how many there actually are out there. Like, you know, someday you should probably have a look at it. We say you win something and all gold medalists are going to have all their problems solved for the next, you know, quadrennial. But I'm not sure how true that is. Like, you know, especially for women, like, you know, how long does your sponsorship last? Is it 8 months, 10 months? Is it going to be 4 years? You'd be pretty special to have it go 4 years. So, you know, I just don't know the real answer to that. Like how rich you will become or how better supported you will become by winning medals if you are a woman, and especially if you're a woman in a sport that is maybe a little off-center to what we think is a traditional Olympic sport, like swimming or track or gymnastics, volleyball.
I'm going to bounce around a little bit here, but many years ago, and you may recall this, TSN launched a women's sports network. Mm-hmm. It was
2001.
It was the first, I could stand corrected on this, but I think I'm right. It was the first and perhaps only digital license that was ever handed back. TSN, that project did not succeed. And TSN essentially, after spending the money and winning the bid for that license, literally gave it back. I don't know that anybody else has ever done that. If here we are 20 years later, if that idea was launched today, a women's sports network, or was re-engineered for today, would it be different? Would the results be different?
I think it would be, because as John just mentioned about the, you know, the apps and all the different ways we can look at things, so you can tailor your experience or your wants to women's version of Netflix or something, you know, or however they would do it. I think you're going to tap into a lot more potential, you know, clients or subscribers using that appeals to them. Like John's got a better, you know, you both have better handle on television than I do, but I mean, the way that TSN launched that 2001 is so traditional. You know, there's obviously there wasn't enough programming that people were interested in to keep it running, but that may be different today if you could have a slimmed down, more groovy version that you can sort of, you know, you can, you know, on your phone, on something else.
How would that work? That really brings up a big question, because after Canada's women won the gold medal in soccer, which, by the way, was as excited as I've seen McCowan in a long time. He's really excited about it. We had to stop recording our
Friday show. Pause. We were in the middle of doing this stupid show, and the game was on, and then they went into the shootout, and I said, well, we're going to stop for a minute and go watch the damn shootout.
So
we still got up early. We're screaming at the top of our lungs. It was a great experience.
But out of that, some of the players on the team said, you know, it's really a disappointment. There isn't a Canadian professional women's soccer league. Yes. At which point you say, okay, you know that is a really nice idea, but how practical is it? I mean, we've seen women's hockey, professional hockey, you know, respectfully fail.
Struggle
in our country,
at the very least.
I don't know.
Let's not say fail. It's struggle.
It's a business, right?
But now it's operating in the U.S. and it's got a Canadian, continue to. But I know what you mean. But I wouldn't say it failed. It just didn't. It ceased to exist.
When you cross that line into professionalism, the concept of making money becomes a huge factor. And is there enough of an audience to generate, and enough of a corporate sponsor base to generate revenue for women to thrive in the professional hockey/soccer world? And it's a huge question.
Well, I think the short answer right now is no. And that's not because people haven't been valiant in their efforts to try to make it happen. If there's a corporate, you know, funder to do this or a set of them, you know, they're not there, or they're not going to step up, or they're only going to put, so there's the money's not there and the commitment's not there. And I don't think you could ask government to step in for something like that, and it probably shouldn't be. But that's where maybe you try to get your male partners, if they would do that in the NHL, or, you know, whatever else, you know, WNBA is with the NBA, but it's a big commitment. I mean, I've been to some of those women's games, and they're great. Back before this particular league folded, but the stands aren't full.
No,
they weren't full, and you can't. And these are small stands, you know. And that's no knock against what you're seeing, because I'd bring my daughter with me, and they just weren't full. So, you know, you almost have to. You hate to say it, but you might have to piggyback in some situations on, you know, a rich men's version of it. NHL, if that would happen, But then, you know, but where does that leave everybody else? They say women's volleyball. I don't know how that would ever be a pro league over here. You have to play over there in Europe, probably.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back with more. Mary Ormsby is with us back after these messages. It's McCowan. It's Shannon. Our guest is Mary Ormsby of the Toronto Star. You know, one of the issues we were talking about, I guess, the future of women's sports, and particularly at the professional level. Here's the reality as I see it, Mayor. Mm-hmm. If you're going to succeed in a women's sport at the professional level and draw significant interest, I think you have to find something that doesn't provide or allow for a comparison with men's sport. And what I mean by that is, I mean, in 2010 in Vancouver, I went to a women's hockey game. I think Canada played Norway and won 8-0. It wasn't much of a game in terms of competition, but had a great time. Mm-hmm. Enjoyed it very much. But the sports where we see women attempting to get equal footing, basketball, you watch a WNBA game and immediately you reflect on the NBA. Hockey, you look at a women's hockey game and you immediately think of the National Hockey League. And in my mind, that comparison, while unfair, is almost inevitable. And it's no less a comparison than a minor hockey team. If you've got an AHL game opposite an NHL game, you're probably going to watch the NHL game. And you go down the list on all of those things. A major U.S. college football game versus a Division III game. You know, you can tell the difference. You can see the difference. And emotionally, there is a different connection. Where do women make their inroads? And is it a mistake to try and compete against the biggest, most successful sporting leagues in North America?
I don't know if they are actually competing against those leagues, as you're mentioning.
Well, but essentially they're looking for the same eyeballs.
Well, but the women's game is different. Like I said, we're not, you know, junior men. But I know what you're saying. The men's game is this, and you guys are a lesser version of us. So, but how else do you play hockey? You know, if you want a league. But they just haven't found, if it's hockey we're talking about, and maybe soccer in this country, they haven't found their believers yet. The guys or women who can write checks with a bunch of zeros on the end to get some sort of traction or come up with a format that works beyond, if it's not league play, maybe you're doing mini tournaments. Or
well,
something
let's, like that. No. Let's talk about two sports where women compete amongst themselves, but virtually in the same, well, three. With the ability to have eyeballs on their performance on television, with ratings and with revenue. Tennis?
Right.
Golf?
Individual sport. Mm-hmm.
Curling, albeit, much smaller in terms of worldwide acceptance, but you know that the ratings for women's curling in this country are pretty close to the ratings for men's curling.
Yeah, always good. Yeah.
Pretty close. What should we take from that? Is there anything to be taken from that?
Again, I just think that's a unique example because curling, which I've never done, it looks to me that it's almost a very similar game and they play often side by side on the same, on sheets of ice. It's just personality and you've got time and, you know, you're not trying to outrun the other guy or outjump the other guy and you don't appear to be a smaller version of, you know, Russ Howard. You Canadians seem to have bought in that they are equal, close to equal.
Or close to it. I mean, I think we all, those of us who have curled and who understand the sport, you know, we recognize a great men's team will beat a great woman's team most of the time. Not all the time.
Let's get, we need to get Cheryl Bernard on here to debate that. Well, I'm not sure that's true. But it's.
Oh, I think it's 100. I think it's 100% true.
I think it's a different. They play a different philosophical game: the knockout game versus the finesse game.
Well, part of it is the physical aspect of it. I mean, one of the keys in curling, there are a bunch. There are times when you want to throw the rock real hard, and a man can throw it harder. A big factor in curling is sweeping. And take a look at the guys who do most of the sweeping in curling today. They're coming right out of the gym.
Yes.
They're big and they're muscular. They're not skinny little guys anymore. So,
I saw Eddie Wernick, so no. And sometimes they weren't skinny.
We're taking shots at curling today. This is great.
I was going to say, I don't curl. I know curlers are great people. Bob, I think you're full of crap. I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, it's that different. Like, a woman can't get up there and heave a stone down the...
No, it's 100% different.
If she doesn't want to.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it is 100% different. I mean, it's probably the closest. The comparison between the men's game and the women's game is probably the closest in curling than anything else. I mean, I don't think we would argue that the best woman golfer would not beat the best men's golfer. Why? Principally because of strength, physical strength.
Yes, we are different creatures, you know.
Correct.
Yeah.
In certain activities. I'm not sure curling is one of them, or darts.
Well, it actually is, you know, for the reasons I've explained. Now, you may be resistant to that.
I am.
To that, but I assure you, when you leave this program and do your research, as I know you will, mm-hmm. you'll find out that there's truth in what I say. Now, I don't think it's as predominant as other sports, but it's still there nonetheless. So where the question ultimately is, where's the niche that can be created so that women can attract the eyeballs on a consistent basis? Maybe be the focus of a new women's sports network. Because I'm not convinced that now, 20 years after WTSN, that can't work. I'd be interested in seeing it give another shot, but I think you need to find the niche.
Well, what about, this would be pie in the sky stuff. What about the existing networks that are out there? If we're going to talk about traditional television, you know, maybe, you know, really trying to dedicate themselves to.
Not going
to
happen.
Let me finish. Certain women's events that, you know, they could probably slide in for an hour. But if there was a key track meet that had, you know, Andre DeGrasse and some of our key, maybe Damian Warner, if he's still going to compete, and our women together, just showing them if it's track and field. I know we talk about team sports, but there's a lot of different events that maybe you try to do as a showcase events, you know, when.
No, quite frankly, that's what that niche, the CBC have developed that niche. The CBC more than anybody and more than any other network. Whether it's downhill skiing, the alpine skiing programs, whether it's the track and field, whether it's, you know, the World Aquatic Championships, those still they still exist on the CBC. Here's the problem: we don't watch the CBC very much anymore. We used to watch it all the time, and the CBC have dedicated a ton of time on Saturdays for those exact events. The other problem is, Mary, and this goes back to the root of, well, maybe it's the root of evil, but it's the root of reality, is they don't generate enough viewers to generate enough revenue.
Correct.
And so the question
CBC
becomes,
can get away with it because they are the public broadcaster who are funded by our tax dollars.
And in this day and age, this is a perfect time for the CBC to say, listen, we have to cover all Canadian athletes, male or female, professional or amateur. They have chosen to go the amateur route more because the other networks do a massive job of covering professional sports in North America. The question becomes for you, Mary, is how do we get over that? And will we ever get over the fact that we do compare a professional athlete and the level of entertainment that we get out of, and I say this respectfully because I love women's hockey, a good women's hockey game, other than Canada-USA, because that exists. How do we do that versus comparing it to the men's sport? because there is that stigma.
Yes. Well, a couple of things right off the bat. You know, it's been tried. Everything you guys have been talking about, it has been tried. Even from, you know, from 20 years, 30 years, it's been tried. And the CBC does a great job, as you know, as you just explained, as it should as a public broadcaster. The second point would be, if you're talking about traditional television networks, it would appear to me that, of course, the bottom line is money, but those networks are not interested. Now, it's not charity, but not interested in carving out some time, whether it's, you know, a couple times a week or whatever month, to try to grow any kind of traction for this kind of viewership, mm-hmm. or do anything around it, or package a show or an event, whether it's a team sport or not. Bob, I still think there are other events out there. Like, I love track and field. Like, I would watch it. But they're just not willing to do it because it doesn't make them any money. So how do you get started if you can't break into the, no offense, old boys club, because you don't make enough money. You're not the Jays. Oh,
Mary, I'm not arguing.
Oh, no, I know. But yeah. It just seems to be there's a willingness to do that. That's what I'm wanting, you know, it's just so hard for women, you know, in some of the athletes to, you know, to shine as they do and work as hard as they do. And they're just not rewarded, if that's the right way. And it doesn't always have to be money, but is it, you know, is it opportunity? Is it some funding? Can I go another few years? If I'm going to have a baby, is there money there for me to come back after the child and continue in my sport because I'm really good at it? So, mm-hmm. You know, as long as I've been in the business, almost 40 years, I've been wrestling with these things too. And I'm not that bright. I don't have the answer. You're raising really great points. We seem to be going around the mulberry bush every year after the Olympics, but
no, I know
everyone says, oh, you women are great, you know, and you're making great protests about, you know, male autonomy of your bodies. Your the German gymnasts wore gym, you know, full body leotards. They're pissed off at having to wear tiny wee things. And the Norwegian handball beach volleyball team wore shorts. They just, you know, gave the finger to their own organization, the IOC. So, you know, if there was a way to do it otherwise, the IOC is sitting on more billions than probably the Catholic Church. So, you know, is there some funding there for the IOC to maybe break through and do something to actually showcase women? God knows mm-hmm. there's not enough money. They've given it to themselves long enough.
Well, good luck with that idea. I think, and you know, there's no chance of that happening. The IOC.
Making a commitment to
anything other than themselves.
The other frustration, and I think, you know, I've been coming, I mean, with so we're out of 15 or 16 Olympics since I became a professional. And every time, 2 or 3 days after the Olympics, we say, okay, let's carry on the momentum. Let's create more momentum. You know, let's not put the athletes back on the shelf and bring them out 4 years from now in their sport. And it never changes. And the question
is, how do you do it? And that's
how do you
having these it? Conversations because we're trying to figure out, is there a way? Is there a way to
see
showcase?
I want to see the Royal Bank commercial about the program that they launched, because I didn't know about it until the Olympic Games either. I want to see the Royal Bank. I want to see those commercials for the next 4 years. I don't want to see them during the games. I want to see them the next 4 years. Well, I can guarantee you somebody at the Royal Bank and the marketing department is saying, we don't get enough eyeballs to watch them. And we don't get enough eyeballs to watch them for the next 4 years. We're going to get them during the Olympics.
You know what? I just had this crazy idea. You know, all these really terrible shows on TV that, you know, probably, well, I don't watch, but, you know, Big Brother and You All Live in a House and Bachelor and Bachelorette and, you know.
I don't watch them either.
RBC type of thing.
You don't watch Love Island? You don't watch Love Island? Come on now.
I didn't know there was such a thing. But anyway, if you showcase that and said, here's a whole bunch of athletes there and all these different sports, and we're going to try them out and do the RBC thing real and make it a crazy show like The Bachelor or something, then you have an old person like me and, you know, no, I don't mean that, but maybe that's something. We're just not thinking of things that grip imaginations now, especially of, say, younger people or middle-aged people. Because I know with my kids, they watch, they like podcasts, and they don't really watch traditional television unless it's a long game, right?
Right.
Or something, but they're listening to all their favorite sports guys. And my sons are all in their 20s. And then, you know, my daughter watches those crap shows like, you know, Bachelorette and whatever they're called. But maybe there's a different way to showcase. If RBC is onto something that's gained, you know, like a few eyeballs and interest during the Olympics, maybe you could do that. Let's follow the journey of this athlete to the new sport we're going to put him in, or her.
Before we let you go, we have a somewhat unique situation. It's unfortunate, but with these Olympics being delayed by a year, we've got Winter Games coming up right away. And we only have a 3-year wait before, we hope, before the next Summer Games. What do you think the potential influence of that will be? Have you thought about it?
Just 3 years from now for the next Summer Games?
Yes. And you know, less than a year for the Winter Games.
I think that for the Summer Games, I think it's going to be probably very good for people who medaled and did well in this particular, because 3 years is not that long. If you're someone in their 20s, you know, if you're a little more in your 30s, that's going to be tough, you know, because maybe you would have retired by now. The Winter Games, I think people are just addicted to the Winter Games in Canada. They're going to love whatever we throw at them because, you know, with the Olympics in some ways are so much about inequity from around the world, you know, but we tend to do really well in the winter sports. My other very quick point would be, what has worried me about the pandemic is not our Olympic generation and the next Olympic generation. It's girls who are now 11, 12, 13, you know, kicked out of school because of the pandemic.
Haven't been out of the house.
Haven't been out of the house. 18 months, yeah. And when they go back to school, there have been, you know, already studies done that they are going to drop out of sports. So are we going to see a lull 2 or 3 Olympics from now? Because these kids just say it was the worst period of my life, and they weren't in school and they weren't exposed to, you know, physical activity. That to me is more important than who wins medals 3 years from now. Like that generation of girls who are coming out of grade 8 going into grade 9, 10 when they bail out of sports.
It's a really good point. And the scarier thing is we're not 100% sure we're done with this. You know, America certainly isn't, and a great portion of the rest of the world isn't. I think we're doing okay here in Canada, but we can't be sure that there isn't another wave coming. So we don't know what the future is going to bring.
Get your vaccinations, everybody.
Yeah. We invariably, as you asked, you know, we look for answers to questions after an Olympic Games, and especially these where the women did so well for our country. And unfortunately, through no fault of yours, we don't have the answers. And we continue to search for them. But hopefully at some point in time, either those answers will be revealed or somebody will make so much money, they'll say, I'm gonna devote billions of dollars to making this work. And maybe that's all it takes. But we shall find out in due time.
But you know how billionaires keep their money, right?
Yeah. Well, they don't piss it away, but...
More or less, yes.
But, you know, they're... You never know when there are people out there who make so much money that they don't know what to do with it. And if they have a particular, and maybe it's not a man, maybe it's a woman who has a particular admiration, love for women's sports, amateur sports, whatever. And they say, you know what? I may lose a lot of money for a while, but I'm going to give this a shot. And we'll keep our fingers crossed that maybe that'll happen, because I don't know the other answers. We love you. You know that. And we miss seeing you around on a regular basis. And if it's okay, we'll bug you not too far down the road again to join us. Is that okay?
I would love that. That would make me very happy. Thanks, John. Thanks. Thanks, Bob.
All the best. Mary Ormsby of the Toronto Star, back after these messages. Our thanks to Mary Ormsby for joining us on the program. As usual, we solve nothing, Shannon.
No, we actually solved that you really don't know much about curling.
I know a lot about curling. I know more about curling than you do. And Mary Mary acknowledged she doesn't know anything about curling.
No, but she,
and over the coming days, you will find that I am correct. And my female curling friends, of which I have a few, will be pissed at me, no doubt. But they will also acknowledge that there is a certain physicality to curling that means a man's team would be favored over a woman's team. I won't say invariably, but if they were of comparable skill sets, the men's team would win most of the time.
Well, I'm not even touching that one.
And it's not lack of skill.
Oh, no.
It's a physical thing. To a great extent, it's about sweeping. You know, a 240-pound guy with bulging muscles who plays in the front end of a high-performance curling team can carry a rock through sweeping a long, long way. And a relatively petite woman cannot do that, which is understandable.
I'd rather be on Cheryl Bernard's team. So,
well, I'd rather be on Cheryl Bernard's team too.
Yeah, okay, good.
Although Cheryl doesn't curl anymore. She just talks about it. Now, I say that. I don't know if she curls anymore, but she doesn't curl competitively anymore. In any event. Now, there's a sexist comment by you. So you're criticizing me for telling the truth.
I'm not. I'm far from sexist.
Well, let's let others be the judge of that. Toronto Blue Jays won 9 out of 11, I think, in their homestand.
And people are starting to talk about the ghost of 2015.
I'm getting a little excited, I got to tell you.
Are you?
Yeah. Right. I mean, this is a really, really... I mean, if they only could find another bullpen arm or two, like a good one. You know? It's the only thing that's been... This team can hit like crazy, and the starting pitching has been fantastic.
Yeah. And the trade helped, boy. The trade has been.
How many bad outings did you get in this homestand? One, two?
You know what I really liked? Exceptional. You know what I really liked was I loved the outward enthusiasm of the players.
Oh, yeah.
It's infectious. And like, see, when Springer's prancing around the bases after a home run, there is something to really enjoy in this. And that's a really good sign.
If you watch games on television, which most of us now do out of not out of choice necessarily, because we didn't have a choice, there are more dugout shots, more shots of the Blue Jays dugout than ever before in history. And that's not by design. It's not deliberate. It's because they are so animated.
Yeah.
I have never seen a team as animated and having as much fun. Always moving, always talking, always laughing. You know, somebody hits a home run, they come out of the dugout like crazy.
Let's save this stuff. We'll talk baseball tomorrow.
Oh, okay. You want to tell everybody who's coming on tomorrow?
Dan Shulman's on tomorrow.
All right. We'll look forward to that. And again, our thanks to Mary Ormsby for joining us. For Shannon McCowan, have yourselves a swell day or evening or whatever's next for you. See you later. Goodbye, everybody.